The following message was given on October 7, 1955. It was given during the Feast of Tabernacles.
Most people in the world today, I should say 9/10 of the people in the world today, are Epicureans. They satiate or they satisfy their own beings. In other words, they make the most of their life to themselves. They satisfy themselves in any manner or by any means that they can. And every one of us that are sitting here have that same tendency. God created that within us to satisfy ourselves. That tendency. But that is one tendency that we are striving to get away from at this time. If we are overcoming, we're tending or we're striving to get away from that tendency. And the reason that we do, are the people that do satisfy themselves are egoists, or they practice the doctrine of egoism. They think wholeheartedly of themselves. Now in Philippians 2:4, Paul shows us that we're supposed to be altruists or thinking of the other person. As he says in Philippians 2, verse 4, look not every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others. We're not to look to ourselves and look to the things that we can get for ourselves, but we are to look to the things of others and how we can help our brother, how we can help that other person. We are to think wholeheartedly on that and not just on ourselves. But you know, the world thinks today you cannot do that. Now many of you might even think that, well, I can't think wholeheartedly on my brother or wholeheartedly on this other person, how I might help him continually. But you know, God, since He has told us to do this very thing, He also is looking over us. He's looking out for us. We are to put all of our burdens upon Him so that we can think of this other person. You know, when a person is sick, are ill, they think of themselves. And they cannot diligently serve God as they would otherwise. That is, if they think on that sickness. Now, many people do that very thing. Even though they pray to God, even though they call the minister to anoint them with oil and pray over them, they still think almost wholeheartedly or almost all on that sickness. And they do not place their burden upon God completely. They don't continue in serving God diligently. But in Proverbs 25, verse 28, we find that the person that does not or is not able to rule over his own spirit, as it says here, he that has no rule over his own spirit or has not the rule over his own mind to cause him to keep his mind down thinking of himself, and to do, and actually to search out for those things that are actually important, and continually serve God with all diligence, seeking for Him. He says, he that has no rule over his own spirit is like a city that is broken down and without walls. Or you have let your defenses down. You are like a city without walls. You have no defenses against the wiles of the devil. When we begin thinking of ourselves, when we're not able to control our own mind, and God understood that we did have such a mind as this, that we want to serve self. But in Hebrews 13, verse 5, He showed us how that we could be happy and how we could serve others instead of ourselves. He says that we're to be contented in Hebrews 13, chapter, verse 5. He says, let your conversation or your behavior be without covetousness. Don't think of self continually. Be without covetousness. Not coveting those things that another man has. That's not what he means. But doing things for the other man. And then you do not have covetousness within your mind. It says, and be content with such things as you have, for he has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. Well, now, you know, to most people, this is a dark and deep mystery. How that God is always around us. You can't see Him, you can't feel Him. You can't touch Him, nor can you taste Him. Therefore, most people do not think that God is continually around them. Do you believe it? Do you really believe it deep down within your heart? Any position that you're in at any one time, are you always contented? Or do you question in your mind, and do you gripe and grumble? What kind of a spirit do you have? What kind of a mind do you have? Do you know that God is always with you? If you cannot say that God is always with you, then you do fear what man does unto you. And you also have a fear of what you can do to yourself. Because He says, I will never leave you nor forsake you, so that we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper, and I will not fear what man shall do unto me. Just as we find in Romans 8:28, if you love God, if a person loves God, no matter what happens, it's always for your own good. And therefore, since it is for your own good, and you know it is for your own good, then you can think on the things of others, can't you? Now, God proves to us in Revelation 1:4, just to show you how God does watch over us. In Revelation 1:4 says, John to the seven churches which are in Asia, grace be unto you and peace from Him which is and which was and which is to come, and from the seven spirits which are before His throne. Now, what are these seven spirits that are before His throne? Now, it says that God gives you peace. He gives you joy by these seven spirits. He says these things come from these seven spirits who are before His throne. What are these seven spirits? Well, now in Revelation 4:5, we find another mention of these seven spirits. It says, and out of the throne proceeds lightnings and thunderings and voices. And there were seven lamps of fire burning before the throne, which are the seven spirits of God. You know, the candlesticks, the seven candlesticks are you've noticed the Jewish candlesticks that come up, and they have seven candles on them. What do those seven candles represent that were before the throne of God, or actually before the Holy of Holies in the temple? Do you know? Well, let's continue to find out what this really means. In Revelation 5, verse 6, it says, I beheld, and lo, in the midst of the throne, and of the four beasts, and in the midst of the elders, stood a lamb as it had been slain, having seven horns and seven eyes, which are the seven spirits of God sent into all the earth. Now, these seven spirits that were before His throne are sent into all of the earth. For what reason? For what reason are these sent into all the earth? Let's look to 2 Chronicles 16, verse 9. This is the reason for those seven spirits, those seven lamps before the throne of God. Now, why are these seven spirits, are these seven lamps before the throne of God? They are for our help. God recognized that we are very weak and puny. He recognized our spirits or our minds, that we did think on self, unless He gave us a help. So He says here in 2 Chronicles 16:9, for the eyes of the Eternal run to and fro through the whole earth to show Himself strong in the behalf of them whose heart is perfect toward Him. So this is the purpose of those seven lamps. This is what they're a symbol of. His eyes going throughout the whole earth, His seven spirits, are His eyes going out throughout the whole earth, watching over us for our own well-being. So then you see that you can put everything, all of your burdens upon God, because He knows continually what are your burdens. He takes care of you by these spirits. Now that is the way that God takes care of us. That's the way that He does expect us not to think of our own self, but to search for the kingdom of God. And then He says that all of these things will be given unto you. Now most people just think, well, now He's gone away off somewhere. He can't take care of me, but you see that He does have His spirits running throughout all of the earth, His eyes watching over you. And we know that these eyes were given to Jesus Christ. These are Jesus Christ's eyes that are watching over you. Since He did come down here in the flesh and He took our place in everything, since He was tempted in every way that we're tempted, of thinking of Himself too, but He was without sin and therefore He can have compassion upon us with our weaknesses and He can take care of us completely. So then in Hebrews, the 4th chapter, verse 13, as I just got through saying, He does know our weaknesses and our shortcomings because, as it says here, He was in the flesh and blood. And it says, neither is there any creature that is not manifest or is not shown or not manifest in His sight. But all things are naked and open unto the eyes of Him with whom we have to do. Now, with whom do we have to do? With Jesus Christ. Seeing then, verse 14, seeing then that we have a great high priest that is passed into the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold fast our profession. Now, each one of us have a profession that we are to not look on the things of ourselves, but on the things of others, by helping others, by brotherly love. Says, for we have not a high priest. We do not have a boss up there in heaven, or a high priest, which cannot be touched with the feeling of our infirmities, but was in all points tempted as we are, yet without sin. So then He knows what we have to go through, doesn't He? That's one purpose of His being here on this earth, because He knows now what we have to go through. And He does have compassion on us. And He watches over us completely. So see, you have no reason whatsoever of thinking on yourself, on your own things. Because all of these things will be added unto you if you search first the kingdom of God. And how do you search first from the kingdom of God? It's by doing things for others, not for yourselves. Because God says that He will do everything for you if you'll just let Him. So you see, we don't have to worry and fret. As we find very plainly, if you'll read all of Psalm 37. If you do worry and fret, then you're not letting God take care of you. You're trying to take care of yourself, and you're weak. And you cannot take care of yourself the way that you should. So He says in verse 16, let us therefore come boldly unto the throne of grace, that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in the time of need. So if you are in need at any time, in any condition that you're in, you should always depend upon God and not upon yourself.
And greetings everybody again. I just want to keep you up to date with what is going on because the work is moving forward rapidly and new developments are taking place every week. Last Sabbath, some of us were not privileged to be here with you, but we were privileged to be up to Fresno. The chorale journeyed up to Fresno, and we really had a very fine service. And the chorale sang, I would almost say, as I never heard them sing before. We're going to have them with us here today, and now if they can sing just a little better, as the commercial goes, it'll be terrific. And first, about the Gladewater Tabernacle, I think most of you must have received the letter that I sent out this week. Now, somehow I've had hope that this letter is going to still make it possible for us to have the tabernacle this year. It looks like a hopeless case. So far, we have had pledges for about $500 a month, and it's going to take $15,000. So, you see, we're a long, long ways off. We cannot build the tabernacle this year unless the members of the church, and here is the largest congregation we have, and I know that this congregation has only done a fraction of what it's capable of doing. But unless we can pledge over and above tithes, over and above regular offerings, a total of the membership, $15,000 a month. We're going to have about 2,000 people that won't be able to get in over there this fall. But I've stated before that the Balin Manufacturing Company are willing to go along with us, build it now. We probably would give them a $50,000 down payment. We have that money in the bank in this special fund, and more, too, on reserve. But I don't propose to put it all out to them at once. We will have a little reserve to take up the slack if some fail with their pledges and we go ahead. But there will have to be a $15,000 a month contract, and it'll probably last about a year and a half to pay for it. And they're willing to do it because they have confidence in me personally. And yet I'm not obligating myself legally. It's going to be the church. But there is a moral obligation. And if you, brethren, don't send in enough to meet it, I'm the one that they're going to look to. And I know that I'm not willing to sign any contracts unless I can have more assurance than performance so far has shown. Now, I will say this, that we've been going at about the rate of $6,500 a month since the first of the year. Now, if we can just do a little more and double that, we can still, a little more than double it, just a little more than double, and we can have the tabernacle this year. So I still hope it will be possible. I do wish you'd pray over it. I wish that you would all do all you can. We do need it. As you all know, we purchased the Manson property. I'm calling it that because that's the name of the people from whom we have bought it, next to Mayfair, between Mayfair and Ambassador Hall on the campus that gives us the clean sweep all the way through now. And Mr. and Mrs. Manson finally moved out of their apartment, which is the largest apartment in the building. They had divided it off into five apartments, where formerly it was just one 15-room house, I believe it was. They have divided it off now into five different apartments. They have moved out. Two other apartments already were vacant. Two of them are still occupied. And in one of them, we are making plans to move, I think, six girls into one of the apartments, I'm sure by the middle of this week, at this coming week at least. And probably we will not use the rest of the building until next fall, but we will need it then to house the expected increase in enrollment of girls by next fall. And it's a wonderful thing that we have it, and I might just say that our men working on the grounds, our gardeners and the other men and the students helping on the grounds, are taking down the fences. In fact, the one between the Manson property, and we haven't come up with a name for it yet. It seems that the nearest thing we've come would be to call it Terrace Villa. It is of Mediterranean construction. I think it should have a Mediterranean name, and of course, Terrace, it's on Terrace Drive, it's on the Terrace Hill, you might say. We could call it Hillside or Hillcrest or something of that sort, but all the other buildings are on the hill, too. And that doesn't, well, of course, they're all on Terrace, too, but Villa is a distinctive name for a building of that sort around the Mediterranean region. Now, I've had all kinds of tongue-twister names of French and Italian and foreign names submitted that are supposed to be quite flossy, I think, some of them, but I'm afraid we'd never, I know we wouldn't pronounce them the way our French and Spanish teachers do when they present these names, and we're going to speak English and call them by some kind of an English style of pronunciation. Any name that I've found so far, some people will like it, and then others, no, oh, that's horrible. We couldn't stand that name. And I found some that just think Terrace Villa is terrible. They can't put up with that name at all. But I don't know what we're going to do. We'll get a group together and decide the name sometime soon. Now, we are going on a number of new radio stations all the time. And I received contracts this week, as a matter of fact, for a number of the new stations, many of which we're already on. We've been on for a month or so, just now getting the contracts to sign. But recently, in going around the world, we have started on Okinawa, where many of our, of the United States troops are stationed. I don't think we'll reach many natives there in the English language, but we will reach a good many of the servicemen overseas. Then Radio Tangier, just across from Gibraltar, you know, in Spain, which reaches Spain, Portugal, and even up into France. Then the latest one to open up, we haven't gotten started there, but I think we're getting started immediately, is in Elizabethtown, Belgium, Congo. And that is down in the very heart of Africa, south of the middle. But that station will cover the territory down to where Radio Lorenzo Marcus picks up, reaching all South Africa. And it also reaches a good deal of Rhodesia down there. And then, of course, we have the extra time now on South Africa, three times a week now on reaching South Africa, and the mail response is very fine from down there. Then we are on the second time, you know, in India, Radio Goa. Goa in on the western coast of India. We're getting a good return from China in mail, Radio Taiwan, or Formosa, Chiang Kai-shek station. And we are on there now twice a week. And then the second network we have gone on in Australia, because we were receiving the largest amount of mail of any of the religious programs on the smaller town network. They have now offered us the big city network, and I think there are two cities lacking, and then we'll have all of Australia. And we're reaching 85% of the Australian population now, or more. Then Radio Bangkok, five times a week. Now Korea is open to us, and I think that we probably should take that right away, because I'm afraid it may be closed up to all radio or religious broadcasting soon. We don't know what the Chinese communists are going to do over there. They're just now offering to take their troops out of North Korea. And, of course, that's only a trick to try to induce the United Nations and the United States to pull out of South Korea, after which, of course, the communists would come right down and take over South Korea and the whole thing. And the fact that they are beginning to move means they undoubtedly are trying to plan or plot some way to take over South Korea. Then we have our network in the Philippines. In Manila, we are on a 50,000-watt station at about 500 and something on the dial, the very finest dial spot, and no competition over there, 50,000-watt standard wave. Beside, there are about 15 stations on the entire network through the Philippines. And we already had one church over there that had come over with us, and there are two or three more now. They have been with what we call the Sardis Church, as described in the third chapter of the book of Revelation. They've already been Sabbath keepers. They've already believed a good deal of mostly of what we do. But they've been getting the Bible correspondence course, Ambassador College Bible correspondence course. Their ministers are studying it and are coming with us, and it seems they're pulling their whole congregations along with them. I think there are at least 30 or 40 members or more in each one of these congregations in different towns over in the Philippines. We're simply going to have to send a man from here over there before too long to, to interview these men, check in on it, and sort of get things organized a little better. Anyway, the work is picking up. It's increasing all the way around. Our one difficulty seems to be in finances, and while we're having an increase over last year, about the average increase, yet it seems like the need increases faster than the means. And we still need you to pray for that. And now just this morning, I was looking over some of our annuals, the college annuals, and checking over all the students, except for the newer ones that are in this year, which, of course, are not pictured in last year's or the one before, the college yearbooks. But the just one thing about it, we do not have enough ministerial timber coming. in the next several years. Not anywhere near as much as we need. Now the prod is on all of you fellows who are in the college to try to make more of your opportunities, that more of you can become ministerial timber than, well, the harvest is great and the laborers are few. That's all there is to it. And God tells us to pray the Lord of the harvest, who is Christ himself, that he will send forth more laborers. And we certainly need to. We're coming to the time now, the time of year, when high school seniors are beginning to think about college. And we need to pray that God will lay it so heavily on young men in high school that are graduating this year, that God knows are of the caliber that he can use in his ministry, to cause them to get interested in Ambassador College and to come here next fall. We need a still larger class next fall. And taking in a still larger class next fall means a larger cost of operation of the college. And so it goes, and that's the way we go round and round all the time. And there's no stopping it. We're just getting ready to commence, to begin to sort of start the real big work. The work is so big now that if I had told anyone 15 years ago that in 15 years it would be where it is now, they would have laughed at me. And yet, it is still insignificant compared to where it must go, and in less than another 15 years, because we don't have another 15 years to go. In all probability, we have not more than about 13 years. I think you're going to hear more about that in the main sermon this afternoon. So now, I'm going to break off here, and I'm glad that we're going to have the corral. We'll hear from them now. I think Mr. Ettinger is here, all ready with them. And I'm going to come down and enjoy hearing them with you.
Well, we're trying an experiment. We're going to put the corral down in front. This way eliminate a lot of time changing the stage arrangements. We brought risers today so that we can have the corral standing closer together and get a better impact of sound, I hope, in the auditorium. We're doing a very fine ensemble song today, from the oratorio St. Paul by Mendelssohn. How lovely are the messengers that preach us the gospel of peace. The text is from Romans 10, verses 15 and 16. How lovely are the messengers that preach us the gospel of peace. To all the nations is gone forth the sound of their words. Throughout all the lands their glad tidings. Also, I would like to say that the music in this anthem gives the opportunity for our fine alto section to give us the sound of their voices. The music in this anthem gives the opportunity for our fine alto section to give us the sound of their voices.
This message is provided by the Bible Study website at address www.biblestudy.org. and Barnabas Ministries. Bible study. You have questions, the Bible has answers. Message introduction and closing by Dave Williams, digitizing and editing by Alan Ruth, and post-production by Mike Summers.